Section 3, North Carolina and the Great Recession. As you read, look for causes of the Great Recession, the recession's impact on banking, employment, and government spending, an increasing political divide in the state, and the following terms: subprime loan, underemployment, Tea Party movement, Moral Monday movement, exurbs. The Great Recession, which lasted from 2008 to 2011, was a major slowdown in the economy of the United States that rivaled the problems caused by the Great Depression. Its causes were complex, but much of the problem was the overextension of credit given by many banks to provide more and more Americans with home mortgages. Often, it turned out, many of these were subprime loans, meaning that they were often unlikely to be paid back. The Great Recession was like the Great Depression of the 1930s in two ways. First, in both cases, leading up to the collapse, money had been lent unwisely. Before the Great Depression, people bought stocks on the margin, meaning that they borrowed money to buy shares, expecting their value to rise. When stock prices fell, shareholders were unable to pay back their loans by selling off shares at a profit. Before the Great Recession, people who could not afford it borrowed money to buy homes, expecting home prices to rise. When prices fell instead, many found that they owed more money than their homes were worth. Second, the immediate effect of the problem, both times, was a fear that the banking system would not be able to continue without a lot of harm done to consumers and citizens. The local impact of a national slump. The Great Recession had a negative impact upon the people of the Tar Heel State. During the worst years, from 2008 through 2010, the state's gross domestic product was at half the level it had been during the prosperous 1990s. In 2008, North Carolina was the nation's 10th largest state in terms of population, but it soon ranked 6th in the number of people who lost their jobs. More than 500,000 jobs were eliminated in the state over the course of the recession. And when people found new jobs, they were often not at the same pay level as before. In 2015, the rate of underemployment was a third higher than it had been in 2011. Underemployment occurs when people are employed at less than full-time jobs or at jobs that do not match their training or meet their economic needs. Often a person had to have multiple jobs to keep going. North Carolina also led the nation in the number of times, on average, a laid-off worker renewed a request for unemployment compensation before getting a new job. North Carolina's recent rise to become a world banking center made it a likely victim of the recession. One of the most surprising results of the advent of the Great Recession was the loss of Wachovia, which had become the fourth largest bank in the nation after banks were allowed to do business across state lines. One of its bigger mergers had been with First Union, also a North Carolina bank. Wachovia had offered so many subprime mortgages to so many customers that it was feared much of the debt would not be recovered. At one point, it appeared that the federal government would have to step in and manage a reorganization of the business. In late 2008, Wells Fargo Bank of California acquired Wachovia, a move that restored its ability to operate. Wachovia kept its name until 2011, when all of its operations were absorbed into Wells Fargo. Although the banks kept operating, many businesses across the state had such a shrinking customer base that they either laid off workers or closed. More than 250,000 state residents were out of work for various periods of time because of the Great Recession. North Carolina's state government struggled to collect enough tax money to operate without having to borrow money. At one point, Governor Beverly Perdue proposed using cash from the state's education lottery to keep state government operating. This was not implemented, but the state for a while faced a $3.7 billion shortfall in its tax receipts. The burden was especially heavy in the community college system. With so many jobs lost in the old kinds of factories, people of all ages across the state enrolled in industrial retraining. State parks and state historic sites cut back on staff and hours to try to weather the bad times. To To help some students make the best of the new technological world, the state in 2011 started the North Carolina Virtual Public School, which offered online classes. Eventually, more than 50,000 students enrolled. The state also expanded the pre-K program, designed to help children get ready earlier for their school years. This had the advantage of allowing working parents an alternative to expensive child care. North Carolina's counties in some cases took an active role in trying to build back their local economies. Most counties dipped into their fund balance, the money they keep in the bank just like any other saver, to fund their services. More than 80 counties offered economic incentive packages to new businesses, mostly free hookups to utilities and tax breaks in the first years of operation, with the tax savings connected to the number of jobs created. Local leaders used these packages to convince international corporations to open facilities in their communities. The largest investments by technology companies were located in the Foothills area to the north and west of Charlotte. Catawba County was successful in getting Apple to open a data storage unit in the old textile town of Maiden, and Google came to Caldwell County. The Apple deal was worth $1 billion. Down east, Wilson County helped Bridgestone and Firestone Tire Corporation open a new plant. Jobs related to health care also grew in number in some places. Hospira, a company that made high-technology medical devices, created more than 2,000 jobs in Rocky Mount. How hard the Great Recession hit depended upon which kind of community a North Carolinian lived in. Factories closed first in and around towns of 20,000 or less. Few of those factories were ever reopened. As late as 2015, half the counties in the state had more people looking for jobs than there were job openings in the local area. In contrast, the largest urban areas were able to bounce back and do the bulk of the hiring for new jobs during the period. Charlotte, Raleigh, and Durham accounted for more than two-thirds of the new jobs created in the state from 2009 to 2015. Because of continued military spending by the federal government, Cumberland and Onslow counties did not suffer as much. New debates. For most of the 20th century, North Carolinians prided themselves on being a state that balanced liberal aspirations with conservative approaches. Liberals and conservatives worked together, for example, to see that our schools, from the kindergarten to the university level, were among the best in the southern states. The agreement on common goals had been particularly the case in the 1990s, when leaders from both political parties had held important offices from one election to the next. In the 2010s, however, both these aspirations and approaches became controversial. The people of the state found themselves as deeply divided as they had been since the days of Reconstruction and populism in the 1800s, maybe even the Regulation all the way back to the 1700s. In the early 2000s, North Carolina Democrats were in charge of most state offices, just as they had been for much of the 20th century. The state's citizens elected two Democrats in a row to be their governor. The second, Beverly Perdue, was the first woman governor in state history. Between 2008 and 2013, the state tilted in a conservative direction. This was caused in part by the loss of economic security in the Great Recession and the rise of the Tea Party movement, a national protest group that called for a reduced role of government at all levels in the lives of citizens. By 2013, for the first time since the days of William W. Holden during Reconstruction, Republicans held the governor's chair and the majority of seats in the state legislature. The Republican majority, influenced by Tea Party beliefs, began to reverse ideas and programs that were decades old. The state legislature in 2011 created new election districts that were attractive to some citizens but were regarded as unfair by others. Critics charged that the districts, at both the legislative and congressional levels, led to minorities being able to win only where minorities make up the bulk of the population. On the other side, some state citizens complained that some districts favored minorities, particularly the famous Snake District that went from Greensboro to Charlotte, which in some places was only a few miles wide. Several court cases followed, brought forward by both sides of the issue. In 2016, a federal judge ruled the congressional districts to be unfair. Among the many changes demanded, the state got rid of many of the wiggles and twists in districts that supposedly had promoted discrimination. In fact, in redoing the boundaries, the state took a turn back to tradition in honoring county lines as much as possible. North Carolinians also became divided over how easy it would be to register and vote, particularly for people who often had a hard time getting to the polls because of work hours or lack of transportation. Both parties had originally supported the new idea of early voting, where a citizen had a specified period of time to go to the polls ahead of the scheduled election day. They could also register to vote and then vote on the same day. This had been widely popular across the state. In 2014, Republicans opposed these changes, claiming that the chance of voter fraud, where someone votes without being really eligible to, had increased. This eliminated same-day voting and cut back on the number of days given to early voting. This change brought great controversy to the state. Conservative Republicans also charged that Democrats had not wisely managed the state's money, technology, and other resources, particularly during the Great Recession when the state sometimes had a hard time collecting enough tax money. Republicans proposed three related ideas to move the state in a new direction. First, they cut taxes on all citizens and most businesses, hoping that putting more money in the people's and corporations' pockets would prompt more investment inside the state. Conservatives argue that the state had for too long put too many restrictions on the marketplace. That had to change if North Carolina was to compete in the new global marketplace, argued Tom Tillis, the Speaker of the State House. A new law gave a new small business a way to save on the taxes it paid for the first profits it made. Tillis, a technology consultant before entering public service, was elected a United States Senator in 2014 because a majority of those voting agreed with his position. Second, conservatives cut government programs in many areas. For example, in 2014, the state ended the tax credits earned for restoring old buildings, making it more expensive for North Carolinians to practice historic preservation. The state also ended the automatic raise that teachers received when they earned an advanced degree in their specialty. This had been one of the ways the state had attracted people into the profession at a time when teacher pay was a problem. Later, in 2016, the legislature restored the historic preservation tax credit and gave pay raises to first-year teachers to address hiring issues. There was also controversy when the legislature cut back the growth of health care funding and unemployment benefits. Third, conservative state leaders took steps to oppose many of the changes in social values that accompanied globalization, digital technology, and immigration. For example, voters in the state in 2013 passed a referendum declaring that marriage was between a man and a woman. This was the first of a number of issues that related to individual identity and family values, all of which became controversial. North Carolinians who did not agree with the Tea Party approach to government soon protested. Thousands joined what came to be called the Moral Monday Movement. Beginning in 2014, protesters walked into the hallways of the state legislative building to disrupt the proceedings and call attention to their grievances, including the claim that recent reforms like voter identification requirements had a racial bias. These protests lasted for more than a year, and almost 1,000 citizens were arrested. One rally, which included public school teachers from across the state, numbered more than 20,000. The Moral Monday leader, the Reverend William J. Barber of Goldsboro, had been one of the first African Americans to integrate the state's public schools back in the 1960s. The conflicts of the past several years were the principal issues in the elections of 2016. Democrat Roy Cooper of Rocky Mount, the state's attorney general, challenged Governor Pat McCrory in the gubernatorial race. McCrory promised to continue to represent the more conservative, traditional values that had long been strong in the small towns and rural areas. Cooper appealed to the diverse groups of people throughout the state to come together and forge new agreements on social and economic issues. At the same time, Wake County legislator Deborah K. Ross, a Democrat, challenged U.S. Senator Richard Burr over many of the same issues on the federal level. The election was close, as North Carolina had by 2016 become a purple state, where either the red Republicans or the blue Democrats could win a majority. There was a new pattern to these divisions in terms of who was on which side. As North Carolinians confronted the challenges of the 21st century, they seemed to be caught up in a new form of sectionalism. This time, it mattered not whether they lived in the East or West, but how urban they had become. Republican Party leaders lived in the exurbs, the outlying areas ringing the growing cities, or they came from small towns and counties that were not growing as fast as the urban areas. In contrast, Democrats tended to be people who lived in the new and revitalized cores of the cities, like the center of Charlotte, or the denser population areas of the Triangle or Triad areas. It seemed to some observers like the return of the disputes that dated back to the days of Herman Husband and William Tryon, when so many people had come to North Carolina in a very rapid manner. It surely would lead to people across the state coming up with ideas that would take the state past its challenges and create new horizons in the goodliest land. Special feature: Carolina Progress, Rapid Transit. Through much of its early history, North Carolina was a place where its residents often got stuck in the mud. In recent years, they more likely got stuck in traffic. The growth of urban places often outpaced our urban infrastructure, structures like highways and bridges that aid transportation. One solution to urban congestion is building rapid transit, vehicles that hold many people and can bypass most stops and avoid most jams. The turn to rapid transit began in North Carolina's most urban places, Charlotte and the Research Triangle area. By the 2010s, both of these metropolitan places had made big plans and started big projects. The Charlotte area transit system was started in 1999. Charlotte combined better bus routes with a light rail system, a railroad strong enough for passengers but not for heavy freight. Its initial route was the Lynx Blue Line from Uptown, 10 miles south to Pineville. Charlotte also built commuter parking lots that would allow people to transfer to either bus or rail. By the 2020s, work was to begin on the Blue Line north to the University area. That would allow residents to go from one end of the city to the other. Charlotte also introduced two new means of getting around. Its first Gold Line trolley ran south from the center city, and a second line was completed in 2015 eastward to Central Piedmont Community and Presbyterian Hospitals. That second line was to eventually extend along Central Avenue to the northeast. At some trolley stops, rental bicycles are available. The user can pay a fee, keep a bicycle all day, and return it to any other rack in the city. Charlotte also has special-built bike and bus lanes on some of its major streets. Officials in Wake County approved a plan to combine dedicated busways and light rail. Another plan, Four Big Moves, would provide a rail line between downtown Raleigh, the International Airport, and Duke University. There was also a proposal for a connection to the light rail line planned between Durham and Chapel Hill. When completed, North Carolina would have urban systems rivaling any in the world.